The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Russell Shorto. He's got a new book out. It's called Small Time, A Story of My Family and the Mob. And he joins us on the phone in Maryland. Hello, Russell.
Hi, Vic. How are you?
This is really quite a story. It was kind of sitting right in your lap, and you really weren't paying attention, were you?
Yeah, I mean, I write narrative history. I write books of narrative history for a living. That's what I do. And my books up till now have all been set in the distant past. You know, I guess I'm most known for my book, The Island at the Center of the World, which is about the Dutch founding of what became New York. And that's a story that takes place about 350 years ago. And I wrote a book about the American Revolution. And I've always known since I was a kid, I knew somehow that my grandfather ran the mob with his brother-in-law in my hometown, Johnstown, Pennsylvania. But I assume every family has, you know, things that everybody knows, but everybody kind of agrees we don't talk about that.
Mm.
And that was that. So, and as a kid, you know, kids learn things, even though nobody's teaching it to them. So I somehow picked that up, and I knew it, but I also knew not to talk about it, and I didn't really think about it. And that's that, you know, even though this that's what I do for a living.
Uh-huh. Well, my dad was in the numbers racket in Chicago, and he liked talking about it, but that's another story.
Yeah, but, you know, no, well, that's a similar story. I've gotten, since this book came out, you know, when you write a book, you never know who, like, the natural constituencies are going to be for it. But I've gotten hundreds of emails from people who, you know, maybe a lot of them are from smallish towns like Johnstown, whether it's, you know, Rockford, Illinois, or whatever. But some of them are from cities, and a lot of them are not necessarily Italian, but just immigrant background, blue collar background, and that kind of the pervasiveness of numbers and those sorts of things. That's, you know, such a feature of the landscape in 20th century America.
Hmm. Well, I think when most of our listeners think of Johnstown, if they think of anything of Johnstown, Pennsylvania, they think of the big flood. Tell us
right.
about Johnstown and why this era of the 1940s and 1950s was such a great period to be a mobster in Johnstown.
Well, it was. You're right. The flood is its claim to fame. And Johnstown is an immigrant town. It's a blue-collar Rust Belt town, and that's another part of the story. And so many people who have gotten letters from or gotten emails from have that kind of experience. They're from those towns that had their heyday in the mid-20th century, and the factories were booming. And now, you know, so many of these places are still trying to figure it out. You know, what's their role in the future? The story, I was struck by the extent to which the story of the rise of the mob in America is simply an immigrant story. It's one variation of the immigrant story, and it's an American discrimination story. So first of all, you have, in a very short period of time, 4 million people emigrate from southern Italy to the U.S., and they come legally. They come answering calls for work. You know, there was work that they had that Americans didn't want to do, which was either on plantations in the South or in coal mines. Those were the two big things initially. And that was the case with my great-grandfather, who came from Sicily. And they went to these towns, and they did this work. And then there's this whole wave of discrimination, and these Americans saying, basically, these people aren't real Americans. And that was, you know, very, you have to think that America at that time was very white and very Protestant.
Mm.
And what they were particularly up in arms about was Catholics, Italians and Irish, Poles. So on the one hand, you've got this American immigration story. On the other hand, you've got the discrimination against those immigrants. And out of that then comes, you know, there's this channel opens up for these immigrants and their children to do something else. The kids grow up with this sense of what America is all about. They go to American schools and they learn you're supposed to admire George Washington and Henry Ford and American capitalism. But they also, it's very clear, they're not going to be able to go to college. And then Prohibition comes along. And here was the big opportunity. So cities like Johnstown, all over the country, these people started providing this product that everybody wanted that was suddenly illegal. And that became the kind of foundation for the mob.
Mm. My guest is Russell Shorto, and his book is Small Time, A Story of My Family and the Mob. Your father's dad, also Russell Shorto, is the central figure in your family story of the mob connection. You didn't really know him very well, did you?
No, I didn't. Really kind of ostracized from the family by the time I came along. He was a small town mob guy, but he was also, he wreaked a lot of havoc on the family. He was a drinker and a womanizer, and he had children with various people in town and kind of moved the children around as he saw fit. Mm-hmm. So created a lot of scars, and he was pushed out of the family. He stayed in the town, and so I did not have much association with him. So he became for me this, I think understandably in a child, you know, the way people treated him, this very dark figure, which had partly to do with the fact that he, you know, ran the gambling operations in town, but also for that kind of behavior that really scarred people in the family.
As you discovered this story and became interested in it, I really enjoyed the way this happened with this this fellow who was singing in the piano lounge. Tell us about him. He's really a key figure in this story.
Frank Filia is my mother's cousin. So as you said, it's my father's father, who's the mob guy who I'm writing about in the book. My mother's cousin, Frank, I didn't know this, but he had in his teens, he worked, that was his first job, was working for him. And he told me he was 16 years old, and he remembers walking down the street. He remembers what block he was on, and the sun was shining, and he said to himself, "I'm in the mob." And he just felt so proud. He worked for him as a numbers runner and things, and then later he moved away. He still is a jazz musician. I think he's 86 now. And he spent his whole career in Las Vegas. And then he came back to town after he retired, and that's when I ran into him. And he said to me, basically, "You're the writer, and this is a great story. This is history. Why aren't you going to tell this story?" And so he's the one that really planted that seed, and he then began opening me up to the idea and then introducing me to, you know, of course, the people, my grandfather, that those guys are gone. Mm. But Frank's, the people of Frank's age, they were the young guys who looked up to them at the time, and they soaked it all in, and they worked for them, and they. So he began giving me the building blocks out of which I could construct a story.
Uh-huh. And there are a couple threads that run through your narrative here that I, as a reader, just couldn't wait to hear more along each one of them. And one of them involves your dad, who, as you began this project, was having some health issues, and it seemed like to the reader that he wasn't going to be around for the whole story or for most of the story, like he was on his way out right at the beginning. And then the other thread is someone who is murdered, and his car was left downtown. These two threads, trying to figure out who committed the murder and the story of your dad and this wonderful twist that you have about his connection to his father and how that all kind of melted down. What a wonderful thread that is.
Well, thanks I'm glad to hear that those things are what struck you in it. Early on, once Frank had got me into this, I was trying to work on this. I was trying to research this story without involving my father. And I say strangely because my father was my grandfather's son. He probably knew more about him and that world than anybody that I was likely to run into. And I was trying to do it. I was trying to avoid involving him. Mm-hmm. I think because of this complicated dynamic, you know, that and I spent some time in the book trying to tease it out. Everybody can relate to, you know, there are things about in your relationship with your father or your mother or whoever in your family that, you know, it has evolved in a certain way and it's kind of hardened and you can't get around it. So it had to do with our relationship. And finally, as you say, my dad, he had COPD and he had this, I think it's called an exacerbation, and suddenly he was in the hospital and it really looked like he wasn't going to make it. And he did. He came out and he was moving around again. He was going to the store and all that. And I just felt he'd been given such a new lease on life. And I had, too, and this project had. And so I asked him, will you work on this with me? Uh-huh. And he immediately said yes. And for about the next 3 years, we were a team. And we would, and he opened doors for me. We would be talking about somebody, and I'd say, I've never heard of that guy. And he'd just call him up on the phone and say, we're coming over. And we'd, and there, you know, we'd meet somebody else who provided another kind of piece of the puzzle. So in terms of our relationship, it became this wonderful way to kind of reconnect with my dad. And we were both trying to find this other figure who was his father, who my dad said to me at one point, he never broke cover about his own father. Such a strange, you know, like his father hid himself even from his son. Mm. And the other thread that you talk about is... As I started sitting down with the old people who were, you know, who lived through the story, everybody said to me, do you know the story of Pippi? Do you know about Pippi? And Pippi was a bookie who had worked for my grandfather who was murdered. And initially I just thought, well, this is a story about the mob and here's a murder and it's unsolved, so I'll work it in somehow. But as I got further into it, I realized that murder is central to the whole story of the mob in my town and to what happened to my grandfather. And actually then it weaves around, it comes back around to be not just an important factor in my grandfather's life or the end of his career, but in my father's relationship to the material as well. So it all kind of comes full circle.
Yes, the death of this low-level bookie really changed the whole landscape for the entire mob in your town, but readers will need to figure that out by reading your story. The story of Russell Shorto's family's connection, small time, and the mob. Give us a setup. What were they making money on? Tell us about this cigar store.
Yeah, it was all about gambling, and, you know, I make the point in the book of saying there is nothing unique about Johnstown. This was going on in Scranton and Schenectady and Amarillo and Fresno. You know, it was the same thing all over. So after Prohibition ended, by the time it ended, they were pretty much shifting over to gambling as their main revenue source. And that's when I think the mob as we know it really comes into being. And that's what happened in my hometown. My grandfather, his mother, when he was a kid during Prohibition, had a still in her house, and he's out with Coke bottles full of moonshine selling them on the street. And at the same time, he's learning gambling, and he's learning to be a cheat. He was a really gifted cheat at cards and dice. Then Prohibition ends. He's around 20 at the time, and his first arrests are for running gambling operations out of the trunk of a car. He then, meanwhile, another guy grew up in the Philly mob, and he is kind of assigned Johnstown. He's kind of given the job of opening the branch office in Johnstown. He comes to town. He meets a girl who he marries, who is my grandfather's sister. Uh-huh. And my grandfather, there he was. He already knew the town from inside out. And here comes the guy who's bringing the imprimatur, and they joined forces. And the two of them became a team, and they opened a place two doors from City Hall that they called City Cigar. It was a cigar store in front and behind it, a pool hall. And they then proceeded to create a host of different gambling operations. The center of it was something that they called the GI Bank. It was a numbers game that basically half the town played. They also ran big-time card games for the big shots in town. They had something they called that was called tip seals that was very prevalent at the time. It was kind of like a lottery. And they another big source of income was pinball machines, strangely enough.
Mm-hmm.
Pinball was used for gambling. You had pinball machines in every, you know, bar and cafe and diner, and the house was in on it. So the way you gambled on pinball was you racked up free games, and then once you'd reached however many free games you wanted to cash out, you'd go to the bartender and you'd cash out, and they'd give you, you know, so many quarters or dollars for those games.
Huh. I remember playing those old school pinball machines back at the bowling alley when I was a kid, and always thinking there was something kind of illicit about it. I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that feeling. I know what you mean. There's something about the lights and all that.
Uh-huh.
It works. It just felt that. Yeah. But yeah, they had a big pinball operation, and they had machines all over, not just all over town, but all over the county. And the beauty of pinball for gambling was there's no product that the IRS can say, where's our tax money on that? You know, there's no pack of chewing gum or anything, and it's just free games. And you reset the machine, and then, you know, there's no product there.
Yeah. In case you're just joining us, you're listening to 91.3 WYSO, your source for public service journalism and music discovery. On the Book Nook today, my guest, Russell Shorto. We're talking about his book, Small Time, A Story of My Family and the Mob. And this big shot from Philly came in to run the operation. So your granddad was the second in command to him. And the big boss put up with a lot of stuff from your granddad. Your granddad was kind of troubled, wasn't he?
He was. And, you know, I'd spent a good amount of my time really trying to understand that. And by the way, I've really, in the process of working on this book, I became a big believer in doing family history, not just me and other people doing it. You, whatever you're exploring when you're looking into your grandfather or whoever, eventually you're looking at yourself, you know.
Mm.
So that was an important aspect of it. But yeah, he was a troubled guy. He was the kind of drinker who would go on binges and blackout, and then he had this problem with women, and I think in both cases it may have been, this is just my guess, that he and his brother-in-law became so successful so quickly, and they made just scads of money, and he had no preparation for that. Certainly he didn't take any like money management course or anything like that.
Mm.
And it's a lot of power in this small world. They manipulated political races for district attorney to get their guy in. They paid off the mayor and the police. And so they, in a sense, ran the town. And I think it kind of went to his head. He didn't know what to do with it.
Uh-huh. And your poor, long-suffering grandmother.
Right, exactly. And she was, her story is so fascinating and so rich. And, yeah, long-suffering, but a very strong woman. And, you know, as we said earlier, I barely knew my grandfather. My grandmother I knew very well because I spent a lot of my childhood with her. And you know, by that time, my grandfather was, he had been pushed out of the family, pushed out of the house. And you mentioned before that I was named after my grandfather. And it never occurred to me that all the time I'd spent with my grandmother as a child that she had kind of replaced one Russell Shorto for another one. I knew her so well. And back on this note of promoting people doing family history, I just tell people, you know, whoever are the oldest ones in your family, sit down with them now. Sit down with the tape recorders and just start going at it. Because I wish I had done that with my grandmother, who I knew so well. But did it ever occur to me to sit down and ask her about her life? No.
I can picture you as a boy going over to her house and being pampered.
Exactly. They would, and my uncles and things would laugh and say that I was being treated like a king.
You know? Uh-huh. Russell Shorto joins us. Okay, so you had access to people, and you got on the story just in time. I love your account of when your mother's cousin takes you over to meet the guys, and you're like in a restaurant or something, and they're sitting around a table, and there's one guy that just sits there, and he doesn't say anything.
Yeah, it was Panera Bread. That was and still is their hangout.
Okay.
You go to the Panera Bread in Johnstown, you'll see that group of guys. They're still there.
Uh-huh.
And there was one guy, he just stayed in the back, and he was, I think, the oldest of them. And he didn't say anything. And my first time that Frank said, let's get together and you'll start to get an idea. And he had put out the word, and this whole group of guys came. And I didn't know what it was going to be, but 4 hours we were there with them telling me stories. And I had my recorder on the whole time. And finally then I went up to him just because it was a little ominous that he hadn't said anything. And he just looked at me and he said, it turns out he was the one who was, I think, closest friends with my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know why I came here? Because your name is Russell Shorto. And it made me feel, I felt a little shiver or something, like, history repeating itself.
I think the reader gets a little shiver from that line. That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right, so you're digging, and the big twist in the story, which I'm not going to reveal, except that it involves your dad and how he had the rupture with your grandfather and the idea that you had all along about how this happened didn't turn out to be exactly correct. You found out, hanging out with your dad and talking to these people, that the rupture was very different than your perception had been. And when the reader gets to that point in the book, you just kind of go, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, I did something more than wow when I learned the truth about the relationship between my father and my grandfather, because, if you grow up with a story, about your past, about your family, your whole life, and then you're in middle age and you suddenly hear, actually, it wasn't like that. It was something completely else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't just change everything on a dime. You can't just, rewrite all your memory banks. You begin this process of processing this new information. But it was, my father was, he was trying to, I think, while we were working on this. I use the past tense because as I was nearing the end of my research, my father unfortunately died. But he was trying as best he could to understand these things. And, this is a story about the mob, but it's really just a family history, that
mm-hmm.
happens to have the mob in it. It could be substitute the mob for, whatever your family business is. And it's about the relationship between generations, from my great-grandfather to my grandfather, and then my grandfather to my dad, and then my dad to me, and trying to look back and to see where what really kind of breaks your heart is when you see where there's, a whole things go off the rails, and it's all because of a failure to communicate, something as simple as that.
Okay, some of these wise guys are still hanging out in the Panera Bread right now. They're talking about Russell Shorto's book, The Russell Shorto, not The Russell Shorto, and they're giving you reviews. What kind of reviews are they giving you? What do you think?
Yeah, the thing that I had no idea about was how would people in Johnstown react to the book,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just overwhelmed by how much the town is embracing it. I get so many emails from people. The bookstores keep calling me and saying, come back and sign more copies. Of course, during COVID, we can't have in-person events, but I've done events for the library and the Heritage Association and those guys. Frank, who we're talking about, called me last night again and just to give me an update because
uh-huh.
he said he keeps saying, you've made me a star, because he's the guy at the front of the book, the one who, kind of introduces me to this world. And he plays regular lunchtime sets at the Holiday Inn in town. He and a guy named John Pancola. Frank plays stand-up bass and he sings, and John plays piano. And so whenever that's when they are open again and allowed to do that, then he wants me to come and sign books and talk about the book, and we'll have a little. I'll be part of the show, so I'm happy to do that once we're able to.
That's great, because that's exactly where the story kind of begins, there in that
right.
piano lounge.
Yeah,
I love that. And he plays like the old school, the Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett kind of stuff, right?
Yep, Fly Me to the Moon and My Funny Valentine, all that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
The Great American Songbook.
Uh-huh. And it sounds like he must have been pretty good if he's still doing it after all these years.
He is, and you know, he's sick, as I said, for a long time he had his career was in Las Vegas, and he just told me when things are open up there, they're going to send for him, and he's going to do another gig in Las Vegas at this place that he used to play. So he's in his late 80s, and he's still going strong.
Okay. So, Russell, how does a guy from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, with this kind of a background, turn into a successful writer? How did this happen?
I've always been interested in – I've always wanted to write, and I'm drawn to history, but not in an academic sense. I'm drawn to history in the form of stories. And, what this book helped me to realize is – if you're doing family history, if you're looking at your family story, you're doing history. I mean, your family members, if they were in World War II or they were part of history. And when you're researching that, you're really aware of it. So I always wanted to write, and I did a lot of magazine writing, and then I started writing books, and my books have all been narrative history, meaning true stories about people in the past, really. And that's what does it for me. That's, I think, the oldest, it's not, telling stories is not what academic history at a university is all about. But I think it's the most meaningful and the oldest form of history. That's what people did sitting around fires for thousands of years.
Before we go, I just want to ask you one more question. What's the last great book you read, and why did you like it?
You're going to hit me. The last great book I read. I just finished a really good biography of Samuel Pepys. Pepys was a great diarist of the 1600s in England. He worked for the Navy, and he kept this incredible diary that is it's published in it's, I don't know, 10 volumes or something of everything in his life, and it's right through the fire of London and just all these calamitous events, but also mixed in with his fights that he has with his wife, and we took this picture off the wall and put that one on. And it's the diary itself is a little much to read the whole thing, but this biography is wonderful because it distills all of that and puts it in context.
Wow. Who wrote it?
Her name is Claire Tomalin.
Gotcha.
Samuel Pepys, the unequaled self, it's called.
Yeah, the fire, the flood, the plague. He was there.
Right, for all of that.
Uh-huh. Well, it's really been a pleasure talking to you about your work. Thank you so much, Russell.
Thank you, Vic. Thanks a lot.
My guest has been Russell Shorto. His book is Small Time, A Story of My Family and the Mob. You heard about it on the Book Nook for the Book Nook. I'm Vic McCunis.